All right. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to the Patrick Podcast. Patrick Chappelle here in your ear for yet another episode. Today's going to be great, people. We've got Brittany Harrison Russler on the show. Y'all, I hope you're ready. Brittany has an incredible story, very passionate person, full of wisdom and insight and perspective, and I think you're going to love her. She is currently a part of the Frothy Monkey family, which is a coffee shop, restaurant, bar, etc., etc., here in Nashville, Tennessee. But before that, she's just a beloved friend of mine. So I think you're going to enjoy it. She's got some good things to share on the episode. So we're going to get you right to that. But before we get to her episode today, just wanted to check in, say, how's it going? Hope everybody's doing okay. I know that times are still wild out there. We are living in wild times, and there is much that is happening. And my hope and prayer for all of you is that you do your best to remain grounded, to take care of yourself, because there is much, much that is to do as we keep moving these conversations about racism and inequality and bias and prejudice, as we move these conversations forward, as we grow in our understanding, perspective, and how we might act. You got to stay grounded, people. You got to take care of yourself, because it is, you can quickly burn yourself out. You can quickly run on fumes. And I don't want that for you. I want you to keep going. I want you to be able to be full of energy and life as we keep moving forward. So yeah, just wanted to kind of give that encouragement to you before we hop into the episode. For me, I'm just hanging out, doing my things, drinking coffee per usual. And I love Frothy Monkey Coffee. It's one of my favorites in town. But anyway, I don't know. That's all I got. Ben, what's up with you?
I have Frothy Monkey beans at my house right now. It is what I do my pour overs with at my own home.
Ooh.
I do enjoy Frothy. And before my diet change, I loved those biscuits and gravy at Frothy Monkey. Yeah, and I still love them. I still love them. I just don't eat them anymore.
Because
I'm vegan now.
Benjamin is vegan. And he's like committed, folks. This is not like a weekend splurge being a vegan.
5 weeks.
It's completely 5 weeks.
Yeah, completely vegan. Feeling really
That's
good.
That's awesome.
I've lost 9 pounds.
Look at that.
Yeah.
You didn't really need to lose 9 pounds, but it's good that you're feeling good.
And it was a healthy 9 pounds. It's not
there you go.
You need some more food. Like it was 9 pounds that people were like, yeah, what's that down there? You know,
it was those
9 pounds.
Well, and I think that people, and I think what's encouraging for people, and this, we can talk about this more in depth later, but for those of you who are considering a diet change, like becoming vegan or vegetarian, pescatarian, something like that, hearing other people who are going on the journey and knowing that it is possible to be full and to eat wonderful things in all of these different kind of disciplines out there. And not even discipline, just a new way of being. So I think that it is possible. You can do it. So if you're on the edge right now and thinking about becoming a vegan, you should do it. You should give it a try.
Yeah.
Just give it a try. Go for it. What's been your favorite vegan meal right now?
Favorite vegan meal? Like something that I would make or something that I would go get?
Both. Give us one of each.
Man, it is really difficult to not go grab some crabless crab cakes from Sunflower Cafe on a Friday.
Ooh,
it's a Friday. It's a Friday only.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's Sunflower Cafe is a bop.
It is delicious, but those crabless crab cakes are like another level of delicious. And they only on Fridays. It's really, really easy to go by there on my way home from work. That's probably been my favorite. And then in terms of things that I would make, there's like a ground beef substitute by a brand called Light Life. It's just kind of like an oregano-based soy protein thing. And making like a bolognese sauce with it and just having some bonza chickpea pasta. Very high protein.
Wow.
That sounds much good. Higher than you'd expect. And it's completely plant-based and it's really, really delicious.
See, folks, look at this. You could be eating like this. You could. You should try it.
It's really delicious. It's not just like it's good for what it is. It's actually really delicious.
Yeah. I'm just a food person. So I just eat everything. So I'll go to Sunflower Cafe. I love a good vegan meal. I love a good vegetarian meal. I love a good fish. And I like it all right now. I should probably attempt one of these things for like a long stretch of time. But I just think food is just so good. And so I'm not limiting myself, minus like eggs. I do not like eggs. Not an egg person. People.
I forgot, man.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Maybe
no
when I'm like 50.
That's right. We talked about that on the podcast.
Right. Throwback. Egg on the burger, please. Yeah, stop putting eggs on things. Yeah, it's good. I want the fried rice without the eggs. That's my hope's desire. It's just
oily rice.
Yes, just oily rice. I like oily rice, no eggs.
Yeah.
All right, folks, we've talked enough. Let's get you to the episode. Thanks for listening. Oh, if you haven't already, go and like it on iTunes. Leave a comment. Please, please, please give us some stars. That would be awesome. We love you. Peace. All right. Brittany.
That's me.
I'm here. We're doing it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. This is like not long overdue.
Well, yeah, I put you off for a while.
Yeah. You know, it's fine. It's fine. I enjoy being big time by people. That's like a hobby of mine. I've tried for many a guest and they're like, soon. We'll do it soon.
I'm a tease.
Yeah, that's okay. And it's nothing. I think all of us are teases in our own ways. So it's fine. It's totally fine. But here we are. Brittany, you are here on my show.
I'm doing it.
So
from the comfort of my home.
From the comfort of your home, which I have been enjoying these like FaceTime conversations with people. It's been so delightful because I feel like we're like in a studio hanging out together, me and the guest. And it's comfortable, it's fun, but there's something about you being in your house, like, and you're like, have all of your drinks and like snacks nearby where you can just like, it's super comfortable, right? Like when you walk into,
you make it sound like I've got a buffet.
No. General speaking, like most people have like, you know, when I'm talking to them, it's like they're comfy, which is good. I like being comfy, and I think other people like being comfy too. But
I disagree. This world of Zoom is it's exhausting to me. I need to feel like your vibe and what you're putting out, and I can't read people as well when I'm not in the same room with them.
Yeah, which is interesting because I mean, honestly, we're maybe getting ahead of ourselves, and that's okay. But that's part of what you do. So no, people don't know yet what you do, but that makes sense considering your job, your role title is like, isn't it like hospitality strategist or something like that? Guru.
I am up for a title change, so that sounds good. I'll go for that.
Yeah. Well, I guess is it director of hospitality?
All right. So I have been the director of hospitality until this week. I got a promotion. No one in the company knows it.
They're finding out that today on the podcast, they're finding out.
Live.
Yeah. Well, this won't come out for a little bit, but that'll, at least they'll know. They may know by then. They may not.
I was promoted to, I forgot the title now, restaurant and hospitality director, which means I am in charge of all of the restaurant side of what we do. So our cafes for Frothy Monkey.
For Frothy Monkey. And for those of you who are listening who are not living in Nashville, Frothy Monkey is this amazing restaurant here in Nashville, Tennessee. And I say restaurant for good reason, because it is a local coffee shop, but it has definitely over the years grown into this like really, really good just restaurant in general, like food, beverages, wine, dinner, lunch, breakfast, like all the meals.
You can eat doing all the it meals, all.
Yeah, which is so great.
We try to do it all. It sometimes bites us in the, you know, but we started as a coffee house and decided, wow, this is, this could be so much more, and kind of took it the style of any European cafe and breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Let's add in wine, beer. And then several years later, I was like, I like cocktails. We basically, sometimes we call ourselves behind closed doors, selfishly designed. Because it's like, well, what do I want out of a restaurant?
Right.
I want great coffee. I want good cocktails. I want great wine at a reasonable price. I want food that's locally sourced.
That's a great coffee mug slogan, though.
Selfishly designed.
I'm kind of into it a little bit. I don't know.
I think our marketing director never likes it when I tell people that. Like, and I'm like, but we are.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I kind of like it. Well, and so what's interesting too, for those of you who are interested in this little tidbit, in my opinion, when Frothy Monkey came on the scene, their first location was in a part of town called 12th South. What is now called 12th South. I would contest that Frothy Monkey and maybe one other restaurant that's across the street from Frothy Monkey were the spark that created what is now 12th South and what now is a popular visited destination in the city of Nashville.
We were definitely, and I didn't work for Frothy at the time. That was 16 years ago.
Yeah.
We were one of the first things on that block.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's true. I mean, there were a couple other spots on there, some OG spots that are still around, but I think once a shop like Frothy showed up, everything started, it was like the domino, and things just really changed in that area. And now it's like probably one of the most walked, like kind of stretches of road in the city of Nashville. Like so many people.
I say that I am not allowed to walk down that road because I don't have a stroller or a dog or really nice clothes.
Right.
So it is a hot place for sure.
Yeah. So, okay. So it's interesting. Now, I'm curious if we were to go back in time and talk to 16, 17-year-old Brittany, what does she think right now? If she knew you're now this director of hospitality, of restaurants, of like creating spaces, of hosting thousands and thousands, helping host thousands and thousands of people, because you create this space that's worthwhile for people to spend money and time into. Like, what does 16, 17-year-old Brittany think about Brittany today? Like, is she like, wow, like that, that is not what we had in mind, sis. Or is she
100%.
Like...
100%. Like, I never... So I was talking to my husband about this the other night when I was offered the position, and I was like, I don't think I'm an adult. Like, you know,
right.
I don't feel like an adult ever. And he was like, well, I hope we kind of never feel like adults. You know, we make decisions, mm-hmm. that are smart and wise, but 16, 17 year old me, I changed majors in college so many times. Finally, my advisor was like, "Hey, Brittany, you just graduate. Like, you just get out of here." And Dr. Thomas, he was like, "You can talk yourself into any job you want.
Right.
Because you are very persuasive and charismatic." And I was like, "Great. Okay. I guess I'll graduate with a communications." But at 16 or 17, I think first I was like, "I want to be a teacher or a nurse." Never did I think I'd enjoy the food and beverage industry, mainly because I was raised in a town that didn't have much of a scene.
Yeah. Well, tell me, talk to us about that. Like, tell us about your roots. Like, where'd you grow up? Like, how, because I'm sure that still, even though you didn't grow up in around a bunch of, you know, boutiques and fancy restaurants and things of that nature, it definitely is still kind of informing how you do life.
Sure. I was raised in Dothan, Alabama, which is the peanut capital of the world.
What?
Are you kidding me?
I never knew
that. Are you peanut capital? We have a peanut festival. That's where Neil proposed to me.
Oh, that's right.
I have missed maybe 5 of those festivals.
Wow.
In my life, because they are life molding and amazing. And there's a parade and a fair and fair food. And I love growing up in a small town.
Yeah. Tell us why.
The community aspect of it, I think, you know, I really, really thrive in community. I need it. I'm very outgoing. I like to walk down the street and see people I know. I like to walk into a store and see people I know. I like when people know my name in a restaurant.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I teach a class on managing and management and hospitality. And I talk about this restaurant that I grew up going to called Mama Rose's. And it is we'll put it Italian restaurant in quotation marks. And my favorite dish there is noodles, butter noodles with, all right, you got, hang on.
I'm here.
Melted mozzarella on top.
Yeah.
A little oil and vinegar.
Yeah.
Chopped up roast beef and jalapenos.
What?
I know. What?
That is, what was the phrase we're using? What's the phrase? What was the phrase you used for frothy? It's
selfishly designed.
That's a selfishly designed dish right there.
It is.
Sounds amazing.
So delicious. But I start my management class off by talking about, I show a picture of it because it looks just as gross as it sounds. And I talk about the reason why I love to go there. And it's because still to this day, I walk in and they know who I am.
Wow.
And that is 34 years later. You know, they ask my mom when she goes every week, you know, "How's Brittany? How's our big city girl," is what they call me. So I think that is one thing that took what I'm doing every day and trying to replicate it. So making people feel comfortable, making people feel known and taken care of. You don't have to have, like, for me, I'm like, I don't really have to have the best product, right, but I want the best experience.
Right.
I get it in my job. I get to serve some quality product, but, that's one example that I used. But I grew up in South Alabama, and I grew up, with my single mom raising me, and I had 2 older brothers. And my grandparents had a farm, and so we had a lot of – I grew up on vegetables.
Yeah.
And fresh vegetables, and we were extremely poor because my mom – she's had a hard life. And so I remember when I moved up to Nashville for college, which I don't know – I mean, I paid for that myself. I'm still paying for it. But I remember people talking about spaghetti and me being like, "Oh, gross. I hate spaghetti." And people would be like, "Well, what? You don't?" I was like, "I just don't like red sauce." And so I remember somebody making some one time, and I was just like, "That's spaghetti?" Because my mom's was just like tomato water.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and like, oh, yeah, just stretched as far as it could. So I didn't learn a lot about quality except for maybe a vegetables growing up, but I definitely understood the impact of a community. And yeah. So I have a special place in my heart for my hometown for sure.
Yeah, that's good. So, that's really interesting. So, I mean, obviously the deep connection of being raised in a small town, single parent home, which I can definitely relate to that. So what was that decision making like for you to say yes, to even make a move to Nashville, Tennessee? Cause that's not close. Like, it's not far away, but it's not, I mean, there's closer schools and places that you could have found yourself.
For sure. So I had, you know, being raised by a single mom, I think I had a very unique experience with my brothers and I. So my mom did this wonderful thing where she did not clip our wings. And mm-hmm. so she really wanted us to go and do.
Right.
And she actually was the reason why I even, well, my brother went to Lipscomb, my oldest brother, and he's mm-hmm. 9 years older than me. And so I been to Lipscomb, loved Nashville. It was 6 hours away from my hometown, which is like enough to get home in case anything happened to my mom, because I was the baby and I was leaving, right, you know, I was right. leaving her alone. But also she did not want me to go to a state school in Alabama.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I'm really thankful for. She really pushed me to go somewhere where I didn't really know anyone and really become my own person. Instead of, she was like, if you go to Auburn or Alabama, you're going to stay in your same cliques. Cause I, you know, that's where everybody went.
Oh, absolutely.
You're going to stay in your same cliques and you're not going to grow and build new relationships and really figure out who you are, which is incredible. And I'm so thankful I did it. I didn't expect to be living in Nashville this many years, man, 15 years later.
What did you think? Did you think you would move back to Alabama or somewhere else?
I did.
Really?
Yeah. So after I graduated, I started working in restaurants. I worked at Fido in the morning and Rumors Wine Bar in 12 South at night. And that was my life, mornings and nights. And I have always been a really hard worker all through college. I had several jobs. But I was just working and not going anywhere, you know? And so I went through a breakup and I decided to buy a one-way ticket to Tanzania.
Wow.
And so I moved to Tanzania where my oldest brother lives and does agriculture and sustainability work and lived with them for about 5 or 6 months.
Yeah.
Until I just ran out of money enough to get home. And the only place I could go was Dothan. And so flew back to Dothan. Just kidding, we do have an airport, but I didn't fly into that one. I flew back home and moved to Dothan, got a job at our art museum, which is actually really cool, and started doing what I thought was going to be really cool. Like, you know, programming for art galleries and all that kind of stuff. And I got really bored.
Really?
Yeah. And there's a lot of cool stuff happening in Dothan right now, but I got a phone call from a friend who's an owner of Frothy Monkey. And he was like, "Hey, we're going to start expanding Frothy." And I was like, I don't want to just move back up and be back in restaurants. Like, I want a big girl job. He's like, "I'm not asking you to like run food."
Right.
"Or I'm asking you to like run a restaurant." And I was like, "Oh,
skirt."
Yeah. And that was 7.5 years later. I mean, 7.5 years ago. And here I am.
So I guess what would be now, even before the move, the little stint in Tanzania and then also the stint back in Dothan, I remember, didn't you spend some time in France? Because you were a French minor, right?
I was. No, I wish I spent time in France.
Okay, I couldn't remember. Yeah, I couldn't remember if you spent time there or what the situation was.
I studied abroad in Quebec.
That's what it was. That's what it was. Okay.
Which is lovely. I was just telling somebody that if I would love to live in Montreal, or you know what? I'd love to have a summer home in Montreal.
It's possible. It's possible. Why not?
I love it so much. It was such a fun. It was just a summer, and I did an immersion program.
I've never been. Like, what's the charm of Quebec?
All right. So you grew up in Chattanooga, and so the first it was summer there, and so I remember stepping outside and just like moving my arm, and I was like, "What? You? There's no humidity? Like I."
Yes.
Like just kept trying to swim in the heat, but it was beautiful.
Wow. Yeah.
So it was.
Yeah, that's so good. Yeah.
It was a fun time. I got to know a lot of fun people that, I mean, you're friends with on Facebook still.
Oh, sure.
But that's it. And my French is basically, I use that for wine. I can pronounce French wines really well now.
which is good. That's half the battle. That's, you know,
part of my job, so it's applicable. And that was fun. That was just a summer gig, and I really love to travel, and that's kind of been ingrained in our family. Both of my brothers have lived all over the world, and I've gotten the opportunity to visit them.
Yeah.
Even though we were, I don't know, it's so weird. I used to, they both started in mission work. And
so was that ever like, how did that bug not bite you like that? Like, was that ever in the back of your mind? Like, I should also do mission work full time somewhere in the world?
Yes.
Okay.
But I think that, I also feel this guilt or this, I feel a responsibility to take care of our mother.
Yeah.
Who's alone, you know, in her 60s. And she's got a great community down there, but there's something about all three of her children being dispersed around the world that I just didn't want to do to her. And so I also don't, it sounds really silly. Because I have worked really hard to get to where I am.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna be humble about that. But I will say I'm just an opportunistic. Like if something needs to be done, I do it, and I take what's in front of me.
Yeah.
And I don't like, I'm not a very creative person. Like I can just design restaurants and I guess that's creative, but I'm not like a big dreamer, which is not, I'm not proud to say that, but you know, like I'm not one to be like, oh, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do this. It's just like, well, this is what's in front of me and this is what needs to get done. So this is what I'll do.
Right.
I have dreams for work and I have personal dreams. But as far as like, if I could do anything in the world and then do it, I'm not very good at that.
Well, yeah. So maybe more so it's like, I'm in the thing, whatever the thing is. And once I'm in whatever I'm in, I can dream about what this could look like in the best way possible. Like, and maybe that happened like at the art museum, you were there and you were like, okay, how do we do these programs in the most creative, passionate, you know, way so I can maybe dream within the situation I'm in, but maybe not like cook up something out of thin air and say, that's what I'll do. And I'll go run and do that.
100%.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, I've got good ideas, but yeah, I'm not one that jumps on them blindly. Like I'm a very, I need security.
Yeah.
Which sounds really strange because I'm not.
Because you do take risk. You're a very risky person.
I take a
person.
Lot of risks.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I have never really felt super secure, but like, I think that's something that I need. And I also am someone that just commits to something and I commit all in, whole heart.
Has that always been you? Have you always been this all in commitment person or is that something you've learned over the years to be that way?
I think that, I don't know. I'm like trying to think now.
I know.
Like, is it because I'm scared to step into something else? Maybe.
Hey, you may end up doing something else. I'm sorry, Frothy Monkey. Brittany and Neil are on the plane.
I have been offered a lot of other jobs and I've thought a lot about them. They're all in this industry, but,
yeah.
I, yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's how I've always been. It's hard to think about my reasoning. I don't remember a lot of my childhood, not for any, I don't know why, but I think I did not have a very stable childhood.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way. My mom was great. My brothers were great. I didn't have a lot of security in a father figure. And I think that I just had my brothers to be that. And I had a lot of great men in my life and my grandfather, but I think I felt like I needed to be my own security and be my own father figure.
No, yeah, that makes sense. It makes 100,000%. That makes so much sense. Yeah.
So I'm your daddy.
That's the hashtag of the episode. I'm your daddy. No, okay, that's very interesting. So I'm curious about your time in Tanzania, and then even more so, what do you think is the thing that's gained in traveling? Because you say you love to travel, and you do, and you have. So I'm curious about like that time you spent in Tanzania. What was kind of like that whole? What would be the nuggets that you're still holding on to as far as experience wise? And then what do you think the power in being a person that travels? Like, what do we? Because I'm a person that thinks that like so much. The more you travel, I just think the better off you are in some ways, because you're exposed to different types of people, different types of culture, different types of food, and just how people operate. And that just helps you to be, I think, ultimately a more kind and gracious person because you travel. And if you just stay somewhere, that doesn't mean it can't happen. I just think that traveling like really pushes that thing to happen sooner than later, perhaps. I don't know. I'm curious about what you think.
So I really like broadening my horizons. And I think that's what traveling does for people. I think it broadens your horizons. I think it's really important for people to feel small. Mm-hmm. And there's no way you cannot feel small in an airplane. You know, like it's
yeah, that's right.
Amazing that we can fly through the sky. I just love observing other cultures, and I'm a big believer in not trying to partake in cultures that are not mine unless I'm invited, right?
Yeah.
But I love observing, and I love to experience. You know, I know that not everyone has the means to travel, and I totally get it. I don't know how I did, except for working really, really, really hard and saving.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And then blowing it all and starting over was my life all through college and et cetera. Just save, 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 blow it all and come back. But I think there's something so beautiful about other people and then finding the commonalities that we have with other cultures. At the end of the day, we still love the warmth of a person. Right. Like there's a personality. I've even spent time in Russia and realized like, okay, well, these people are very cold at first, but there's a warmth underneath it all. Mm-hmm. And that's what people are about, is boiling it down to what drives people. And I like finding that out and seeing that it's common throughout. Little children love to laugh, you know, no matter where they are, what they're doing.
Yeah. And it's so sad in some ways that we all were those little children that loved to laugh. And some of us still love to laugh and laugh often, but there's so many of us that, you know, that we know that are just so hard for them to laugh. They are so serious. They're so, you know, uptight and just, but it's like you used to be this little kid that used to giggle and laugh at the simplest things. And then now you're just so, 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 so serious. It's kind of sad.
It is really sad. Or it's like me where I just like laugh at the wrong time or to get through extreme pain.
Do you have a great like example of this? I could not control myself and this was the wrong moment for me to laugh.
Yeah, this is a little personal, but I remember, my one of my first road trips out of college was with my best friend, Sarah Bagley Sutherland.
Shout out, shout out.
Yeah, that you know. And we were driving down to the beach and we were talking. We actually weren't that close of friends yet. We were just getting to really know each other on this trip. And we were driving down south and I remember talking about my childhood and the way I was raised and my dad. And then I said, yeah, and then around when I was 4 years old, my parents got divorced. And I think it was based on the fact that I walked in on my dad with another woman. And then I was like, wait, did I just say that out loud to you? And she was like, yeah. I was like, and I just started laughing. I was like, I have never like realized that. And then I couldn't stop laughing.
Oh no.
And then I was like, I think that was repressed. And I think that I should call someone and ask if that really happened.
Right.
But how do you ask them? You know,
yeah.
Hey dad.
Hey,
by the way, hey pop. So
how you doing? How's it going? Quick question.
Real quick. Yeah. Real quick. Don't mean to keep you long, but a little question.
Oh, that's good. That's good. And here's the thing. That's the power of a road trip. Things things come out that you don't realize will come out.
Maybe they shouldn't. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe they shouldn't. I don't know. Who's to say? Who's to say? But now you're best friends with Sarah, so you know it's all good. It all worked out.
Win, win, win. Everyone except for me as a four-year-old.
As a 4 year old. Yeah, that was that was a loss for sure. Okay, interesting. All right. But Tanzania. I wanted to hear. Yeah, what was? Because I feel like nuggets get learned when you spend that much time in another part of the world, and especially Tanzania.
That was tough. My brother and sister-in-law they have three children and they live extremely rurally.
Now, is that like, does that mean like outhouse? Like, what are we?
I mean, they have one, but they also have, live in a village. They don't live in a city.
Oh yeah.
They live in a town center. And so I couldn't go out by myself at night. I couldn't, like, it was, I think I turned into an introvert a little bit there. I mean, I'm still very, but like, I just spent so much time by myself. When I would try to do something, like if I was out on the farm trying to like plant or do something, the men or the women would come over like, oh, you don't know how to do anything. Like, go sit down. I was like, I'm somebody that needs to feel like I'm doing something all the time.
Yeah.
Whether, like, even if we're watching TV, I'm like, I got to do a puzzle or a crossword puzzle or I need a doodle or something. I just need to be doing. Mm-hmm. And that was a difficult trip for me.
Yeah.
I learned a lot, you know, but I think those times are really good. I mean, I even think like through this pandemic, I always choose to look for the positive of a situation. And anytime you are taking out of your norm, you get to see a bigger picture, right? And so you get to spend a lot of time trying to decide who I want to be, what I want to be, what are my core values, what's my, you know, what are not going to change through this? And what do I need to hold on to or what can I improve?
Right.
And Tanzania was very much that. And it was fun. I mean, I was there when my second niece was born.
That's awesome.
And it was, that was, especially having all of them that live overseas, that was so special to be there. I learned Swahili a little bit while I was there, but I've lost it. So
yeah, that happens.
So it was really great. And
do they eat chapati in Tanzania?
So much chapati.
Did you learn how to make chapati?
I did not, but I'm sure I could. I just like a challenge. I'm like, yeah, I'll make chapati right now.
Yeah, you're like, challenge accepted.
Yeah, a lot of chapati, a lot of ugali.
Oh, no. No, thank you. sorry to the lovers of that dish. Can't.
The ugali lovers out there.
Yeah, maybe with enough hot sauce. Maybe.
No, it tastes like glue.
It does. We're sorry. We're sorry, but it does.
Yeah, it does. And it has no nutritional value. Like,
it just makes you feel heavy. It's just there to fill you. That's it.
It's like It's like tempeh. All you vegetarians out there.
Tempeh. Wow, cow. Let's go. Ooh, ooh.
This makes me feel bloated. I can't.
That's good. Oh, that's good. Okay, so I'm curious. We kind of touched into this a little bit, so I think it's good to go there. But yeah, COVID-19, coronavirus, Rona, whatever you want to call it now, it is strange because it feels like we're like on the other side, but not really. We're still like in it, but yeah. We're like doing. So there's been so many articles that people have and things people have said about those that are working in local restaurants and businesses and how this COVID-19, you know, has affected them and how it's been challenging, which it has been, how it's been difficult to know, like, how you reopen and move forward, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so I'm curious, like, I mean, what the question that I have is, what would be a few things that the average person that may tune into this, you know, podcast and episode that they wouldn't actually be thinking through. Like, they've heard all these things, but like, what's something that's like, here's something that you may not be thinking about that is such an important piece to those of us that are doing this kind of work of running and operating and caring for employees in the local restaurant business world in the midst of COVID-19.
Oh man. I mean, there's a lot.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping your audience is not well read so that I can just skim over it. I mean,
yeah.
There's so
well,
much.
Yeah. And yeah. Yeah.
And I think that for, man, I say, I've been saying a lot recently, this past 3 months for us, right? Because the tornadoes came through in Nashville and right after that coronavirus. The past 3 months has been the weirdest stress and anxiety that I've had. It's completely different than, all right, I've got 5 restaurants that are crazy busy all the time. That's a different stress. Like, that's just a, okay, you know, like learning to live and learning to empower and learning, you know.
Right.
This stress of, okay, so I've got to figure out how to re-guest. I've got to figure out how to keep my staff safe. I've got to figure out how to keep my staff engaged, but aware. And I, you know, and I've, mm-hmm. I'm going to, oh wait, people, you know, I've got to pivot to selling groceries and I've got to pivot to doing family meals and you can't buy flour at the store. Yeah, we'll sell you flour. It just felt
right.
Like a very, you know, March 17th was one of my hardest days I think I've had. We had to lay off 90% of our company.
Wow.
Because of restaurants do have slim margins, but we also had a lot of like dumb stuff happen, like liquor tax, you know, you have to pay liquor taxes every month. And those had just left and we were building a new restaurant, right?
Yeah, that's right.
In the middle of it. And so we had that going on and for the safety and the labor. And so every day I'm still right before we hopped on this call, I was looking at sales and labor and trying to keep it all in check and making sure that we can keep these people jobs. And I think that's something that we stayed open, not because we were opportunistic and we wanted the money because we actually not making money, but right. It's because we wanted to provide jobs for people. I mean, we did have to lay off, but a lot of our salary people are on health insurance and I just did not want to do that. We all took giant pay cuts. We took all of our GMs and kitchen managers and salary positions took pay cuts in order to keep hourly people on, just to keep people on health insurance and paid. And that's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that people don't know. And not that I expect people to know or honestly care.
Sure.
but it adds then another layer of, so right. then I've got, you know, my own stress of, can I, you know, afford to live? And then I'm also, though, trying to take care of general managers and staff and our guests who are just as stressed out and figuring out their way in all this mess. And so I think that's, it was a really strange stress, but also a good time. I mean, I got to step back and say, what do I want this to, what do I want Frothy to look like in 10 months, two right. years, 5 years?
Right.
And I got to make my wishes known, you know, and have conversations and keep staff on.
Yeah.
And try to do this all in a safe way.
Well, it's so interesting because I love the way you said that, because it's true that we all in this quarantine time, we were all forced to like reset. You had to. No, everybody in every industry had to do a full pause and reset and think about who am I personally, and what are the things that I'm attached to? What is truly my value system on things and people? And like, and what I mean by that, it's like, who am I automatically reaching out to, and who's automatically reaching out to me, and who am I not? Like,
sure.
And that's not a good or bad thing. It's just like, that's, I'm assessing that. I'm getting to look at that. And then, as you said, for businesses, like for those that have been able to, it's like, okay, well, we're going to survive, fingers crossed. If we survive, what does it look like when we reopen? Because it's not going to be the same.
No. Like,
nothing is going to be the same.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's my brother who lives in Tanzania was chatting with me the other day, and he was like, do you think restaurants will ever go back to normal? And I was like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know, but I'm planning for people to stay distance apart for a long time.
Right.
And I'm planning for a lot of those things. I'm planning for, you know, I think that I want to be more conscious of our margins, which is something we always try to do. But so my brother once again was like, why don't restaurants have, why are the restaurants, you know, talking about running out of money? Like, well, don't you guys have like money saved or anything? And I was like, well, yes, usually, but like, here's what happened with us, you know, like
right.
we were in the middle of building, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then I was like, but also you always plan, like in the industry, you always say like, well, that was not a great week. Next week will be better.
Right.
Or next month, my cost of goods and my labor will even out because I was training heavy in this, you know, and the sales will pick up when it gets warmer outside.
Yep.
And never could you ever expected like.
Well, none. Yeah. Well, and I mean, even in cities like Nashville, I mean, a lot of our, like we are a hospitality, local artisan restaurant driven kind of a city. Like truly, there are not a lot of big like corporate retailers and restaurants. I mean, we have them, but like our restaurants and like bars and things of that nature, it is very heavily like localized. Like these are local owners, local concepts that exist within our city. And then we are such a city that hosts a lot of like big mega events. And now those events are not happening. And companies like bank, they kind of build their budget and think about their year, like, okay, CMA Fest is coming. We're going to get a big old pop here and that'll save the year, you know, or that'll get us through this quarter or whatever, you know, or, you know, the weather's going to be nice in the spring. Okay. We're going to be patio packed out. It's going to be great. And like, and I think that's why people love cities like a Nashville, because we do have so many wonderful local restaurants and people want to visit here to try those places out. And now that visiting and traveling is limited, even though I think it's slowly starting to pick back up, it's, I don't think it'll be back to the level that it would be if we were this time like last year, right? Like,
yeah,
it's just going to be different.
I was in a call the other day and we were talking about our goals It's like, what was our goal for this year? You know, like we were talking about percentage, and somebody was like, we might as well just copy and paste that and slap it on 2021 because we don't, I don't see sales going back to normal or lines going back to normal or any of that. You know, I was talking to another restaurateur. He's like, what are you thinking? Like October, November? I was like, I don't know. You know, I have no idea. I don't.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try to be smart about reopening and, but also be smart about keeping people safe and knowing that it's our duty as in this industry to put our guests, but also our staff. I'm a big believer. If you take care of your staff will take care of your guests. Right. And so I always put my staff first. I think that's a good leader across the board, but, if my staff feels safe, then my customers will feel safe. And so, yeah, but we've definitely lost a lot. Like this spring, I was telling my husband the other night, I was like, this weather this spring has to have been one of the best.
Oh, so good.
Like
so
all
good.
All our porches and patios and like personally, I wanted to sit on one and, right. You know, but yeah, it has been a eye-opening experience for sure. Because I think a lot about my employees' wages, our numbers as a whole, and like moving into whatever the future looks like, being very cognizant of that and making the right decisions if anything should happen, but also learning a lot through this.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so I wanted to talk about three or four things I want us to cover before we start to land the plane and get out of here. So I'm gonna hit you with them. First, okay. I want to talk about you just, officially opened another restaurant here in Nashville, East Nashville.
During
the pandemic. And before that, you opened a restaurant in Chattanooga, I guess the last one that was opened, right? No, what was
Nation, West Nashville. Yeah.
West Nashville, then it was Chattanooga. So here's my question. As someone who now is the person who is picking the vibe, the feel, the whatever, like the atmosphere of the restaurant, of the space. Because I'm a big believer in like space and lighting and seating and all that stuff matters, right? And 100%. So I'm curious for you, like, what is that process like for you? Like, are you like a shaman that just kind of walks in an empty building and is like, let me feel the building? Do you try to like go to like the whatever the location is going to be and like, let me walk around and see what is this neighborhood? Like, what is the vibe of this? Like, how do you start this process of like creatively putting together spaces? I want to hear about that.
So luckily there's a team. It doesn't just fall on my shoulders.
Yeah.
I do help with a lot with the design of the restaurants. There's a team of us, five of us in Frothy that have kind of a background branding, culinary, operations, myself and, the main owner that kind of, we all go and take our own trips and visit. So I'm looking at something a little bit different than maybe our marketing and branding, gal is, but we always go into historic buildings.
Oh, see, I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay.
Try to preserve spaces instead of build. Like there are so many amazing spaces that are not being utilized. And so let's do that instead of building new. So all of our spaces are historic. But in 100% honesty, every location that we've opened, I can say, except for 12 South, because I wasn't around for that one.
Sure.
They've come to us. So it is a, hey, I've got this space, feel like Frothy would fit in really well. And then we go. And so for example, we just did this in Knoxville where, I mean, I had plans and, you know, a beautiful space and then it fell through, which is fine, which is great, actually.
right
now. A lot of it has to do with neighborhood, like a walkability. you know, I, for designing, we take a very intentional design. So I walk through an experience. I think if I'm going to be what we call a camper, right, which is a freelancer or someone coming into work, I design where they're going to sit. Because I don't want them in my bigger tables because you know they're going to take up a six stop if you
know.
Can.
You know they are.
And so I don't put plugs there.
To you campers out there, we see you. We see you.
I'm not turning off my Wi-Fi, Fido. But
oh, with the shots.
But love it. I will unknowingly tell you where to sit.
Right.
You don't know I'm telling you where to sit. So we try to be very intentional about that design. Like, okay, here's, you know, our nation's location is like, oh, that's the bar side. That's where I want like dates to happen on that side. And here's where, I want the campers in the back area. And, you know, try to be very intentional about that without signage.
Yeah, that's good.
And then I do like for nations, for example, I walked the space we signed that lease while we were opening Chattanooga. And I designed that space while opening Chattanooga. I lived in Chattanooga for 6 months doing that. And I don't remember designing nations, but I remember when I was opening like my lighting boxes, I was like, yeah, who chose these?
Oh, it was me. Oh, wow.
But I do remember walking that space and being like, okay, this is an old, it was an old hosiery factory, and it's wooden. The floors are all wooden. It's got, every 10 feet there are poles and there's posts that are also wooden. And so I was like, I want to add some romantic, like I want to make this a romantic spot, even though it's a coffee shop. I get it. But I do think that, you know, I err on both sides. Like looks are very important. Aesthetics are very important to me, but also I think that an aesthetic can 100% be overrun by great hospitality.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, and coffee shops are the best first date. 100%.
Yeah.
100%. If you're doing other than a coffee or a cocktail for first date, what are you doing? What are you trying to prove? But the reason that like a coffee shop, like a Frothy Monkey in places like it, are great first date spots. Like if I took a girl to this place, we met at like 5 or 6 o'clock, right? And we get a cup of coffee or some tea or something, right? We're getting a cup of coffee or we're having a beverage, especially at a place like Frothy and Lincoln. Now we can go have a beer.
Just do what you want.
Right. Then what happens is, oh, this conversation's going nice. Hey, you know what? They have really good food here. We should stay and eat.
Slide
right in. Or it could be like, okay, I gotta go. Bye bye. No, that's
I've never
good.
Left a date like that. I'm too scared. I'm like, what else can I get out of this?
Yeah.
Can I get a meal? I'm not having a great time, but I will put up with anything for a meal.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, well, you know, I gotta run to a spaghetti, you know, dinner. Sorry.
That's a beginning of a. I'm really obsessed with cults. There's a spaghetti. It's a notorious cult that invites people to spaghetti dinners, and then bam, they got you in your cult right after that.
The spaghetti must be really good then.
Yeah,
it's like
that was my mom's.
It's like this obviously is a cult, but this spaghetti is fire. So I guess I'm in for a time. Yeah. Got to shave my head. Is the spaghetti always this good? All right, fine. Okay, so the other question I had, that's good insight on spaces, is this is something that I've, so there's kind of, just kind of a, I'll ask it a joint together here. There are two things that I've noticed a lot in the coffee world. One is the lack of females, either A, running the coffee shops, or B, in upper management, or C, just baristas in general. Like, if you don't, when you go into most coffee shops these days, you see more male baristas than you see female baristas. And I'm just curious about that. And then A, the other side of that is, you know, people of color, black and brown people, like in the, like you just, not to say there's not any, because there definitely are some. And there are some black owned and operated, you know, coffee shops and restaurants that are out there that are kind of in that coffee world, but it's still it's still a fact that by and large, there seems to be not as many women and not as many people of color in the coffee world. And I'm curious, as someone who's now spent years in this thing and have traveled to different spots, gone to see different places, talked to probably countless of people who work in this industry, what's your pulse? What's your thoughts? Like, what do you think why do you think that is? It really is just a question of curiosity.
Yeah. So, you know, as far as people of color and coffee shops, there's a lot of talk going on and has been since 2018 really about that. And I don't know the answer. I'm the wrong person to ask, but also I can say Frothy hasn't had a lot of people applying of color. We definitely have people of color that work for us.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I start thinking about the bigger issue, which is when I walk into a lot of coffee shops, I don't see a lot of people of color sitting in coffee shops.
That's why I'm always the regular.
They're like, that guy.
That guy. Hey, Patrick.
You know, and I was reading up on this, and I saw that many years ago, and I don't know the year, that Howard Schultz of Starbucks approached Shaq about being an endorsement. Like, Howard Schultz wanted to put Starbucks in. I don't know if he's meant – the article I read said black communities. I can't quote the article right now. And Shaq said – and he wanted Shaq to endorse him and be a part owner.
Right.
And Shaq said, black people don't drink coffee. And I was like, what?
That's not true, Shaq.
I was like, I don't know, but I do think there is a disparity in the price of coffee.
Right.
And, you know, and you think about, I was trying to think of other restaurants across the board. You know, yes, there's coffee, but also bartenders and, mm-hmm. you know, like last dinner we had out together was at Butcher and Bee.
Yeah.
And maybe I shouldn't say their name, but there's not a lot of, you know, people of color serving there either. And I think about, once again, walking in there and I'm like, this is a bigger issue. I mean, yes, it's an issue
right.
of not hiring, but also why aren't people of color feeling comfortable to be in a Frothy Monkey or being comfortable eating in, you know? And so then I'm like, well, are people of color not comfortable working for me? Or, you know, like, and then I get really into my head. So I don't know the answer. Sure. I think it's a problem and I want to learn more. You know, the background of coffee is very, it comes from Ethiopia.
Right. Which is hilarious, right? Like coffee comes from black and brown areas predominantly, but then is consumed, especially over here, mostly by, you know, white people, which is so interesting to me.
I mean, you've been to Kenya. Like,
oh yeah.
I was so excited to move to Tanzania and drink great coffee. And then I got there and they're selling that shit. Like, they're not drinking it themselves, you know, because they can get a better price for it.
Yeah.
And so it is a big problem. There was a woman, there's a slave that bought her freedom by selling hot coffee.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I'm like, what is happening? But then I look at also the background of coffee and buying it. And it wasn't until 2015 that the United States, stopped buying imported goods from forced labor.
Whoa.
2015, President Obama. And, you know, and so it's like our coffee is grown and harvested and, you know, and dried by black and brown people.
Right.
And yet people don't really want any, like, we're having trouble getting them to see it through. I want you guys to see it through with us.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
But I also think that the fact that until 2015, people were buying coffee or any goods from forced labor did not perpetuate an issue as well.
Right.
But I don't, you man, it's... I'm like, okay, I would be happy because I've read a lot and it's like, whoa, your prices are too high, which is a problem of anybody, you know, Hispanic, because there are studies that Hispanic people drink more coffee than black people. Yep. But I also don't have a lot of Hispanic baristas. And so why do I not feel, why do people not feel comfortable working for me or with me when they're the ones producing the coffee? It's really sad.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it's so interesting because you're right. It's not like it, and because on the same at the same time, it's not that you, Frothy Monkey, or anywhere is actively recruiting anyone to come and work for you, right? Like people are just showing up. These are the people that are showing up. We interview them and then we hire them. And right. if someone who was a female, a person of color, showed up and interviewed and did the interview well, they would likely get hired if we had positions, right? And so it's so interesting because you're right. Like, it's not that there's a sign that says we won't hire you or we don't want you, but it is interesting that that people aren't automatically just flocking to work in all of the areas of any kind of, you know, boutique restaurant and industry. And I do think too that and probably the buzzword that has been floating out there for a lot of things, especially in light of everything that's been happening recently, is proximity. You know, like where we build places matters. And there's, you know, and that has something to do with who's coming to our places, right? It's like if I put it in this part of East Nashville, there's certain people that are going to come that wouldn't come, right?
Yeah.
You know, and it's been really interesting. I know it's another coffee shop in town here in Nashville that's over in Wedgwood, Houston area. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting, I talked to someone who works in that particular shop, and it was like, yeah, we know, obviously we've been real slow, but what we have been seeing is more of the actual neighborhood in this area than we've probably seen before, because they can walk here, right? And they want a cup of coffee or they want some, you know, a latte or some tea or something like that. So I do think there's something about proximity, but like sometimes there's not good spaces to go in, you know? And especially if like the model for us, for, you know, a company is we want to be in spaces that we can restore. Sometimes that's easier said than done, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah.
It does. You know, it's a double-edged sword for sure. I mean, you started this conversation by talking about basically gentrifying 12 South.
Yeah, I did. I didn't know if anybody noticed that. It's a low-key, low-key.
yeah, I mean, it's something, I mean, I was on the phone with our branding, she's an owner, earlier talking about like, how can we actively be involved? You know, like on any of this front of, you know, yes, we can, you know, we can donate money in, but like, what are other ways to take action that don't make it seem, showy, right? Because that's not, we're not trying to profit off of showiness. We just want to be good stewards of our community, the whole community.
Right.
And all of, you know, and I just, it's hard, you know, and we're ignorant. Yeah. Me as a white woman, I'm ignorant. On the front of women, I love a woman leader.
Oh yeah. Same. I think here's what I think, right? Is that you and I both were raised by single females, like single parent homes, right? These females. And I think that for whatever reason, I think it's connected to that I'm more comfortable with a female leader than I am some male leaders. I don't know.
Really?
I 100%. Well, 100% follow a woman then, because most men are pretty trifling anyway. So
interesting. I don't know. I feel the opposite. In my experience, I have worked for one woman and it was not in food and bev, and I left because of her, and I actually got her, the board kicked her off of her job because I left, because she was crazy.
Well, yeah.
But I, you know, I've never shied away from men men leaders, and I've never felt that I didn't have a seat at a table for being a woman. But I also am not a very sensitive person. Not saying that the people are sensitive. I just tend to sit down, you know?
Right.
I take a lot of initiative that I often shouldn't even. But yeah, you're right. I mean, having a woman leader, I mean, I have hired, man, the past, well, that's not true, I guess. The general managers of Frothy, there's more women than men because I like an empathetic leader.
Yeah.
And I like somebody that can empathize and I think women are really good at that. Not saying men aren't, and not saying that all women are. But yeah, I definitely, there is some truth to being raised by a woman and a man, a hard working woman.
I mean, like, what's so interesting is when we start thinking about, if we were to sit in a room with a bunch of people and do a survey, said, okay, everybody, tell us the qualities that make up a good leader. And some of the words that people would say would end up being qualities and words that a lot of times we give attributes to females. Like, we want a leader that's compassionate. We want a leader that shows empathy. We want a leader that listens. We want, you know, like, it's sometimes when you start looking at, and then if you put those words up and say, which gender tends to get called this the most, like, you end up seeing a lot of those qualities are quote unquote female qualities. Not that anything's like limited to male or female, but it is very interesting to me that when you actually start writing out a list of what you want, you know.
Yeah.
This is interesting. I don't know.
I mean, because you also want to be taken care of by your leader as much. I like to read a lot of books on leadership, and I think that one that resonates well with me is called Leaders Eat Last by Simon Sinek. And it's like, to me, the fact that my mother would purposefully, because we didn't have a lot to eat growing up, and I grew up with two boys that could eat everything and anything on the table. She would eat last to make sure that her troops, you know, like, got their nourishment. And I think that people want that in somebody that is going to look out for them, but also push them to be, you know, what they need to be, and push the boundaries a little bit on challenging them, which I think, not to say dads can't do that or grandmas can't do that.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that, you know, I just find it interesting, but I, that's also an interesting piece is that, you just don't, you know, especially in coffee, like, seeing lots of female baristas. It's like, it's growing. It's happening. It's starting to happen. But like, in years past, and I've been finally waking up to it, I was like walking around in another city. I was like, all these baristas are guys. What the heck?
I think that was the time when you like had to have a man bun and...
Yeah, I had a man bun at this time. I was wearing Lululemon. It was very delightful.
You know, and I think, I mean, even going back to black and brown people and women, coffee shops are known to be, can be perceived as snobby and too hip, right?
Right.
And that's not welcoming for anyone. I have friends that own coffee shops that I don't even like walking into because I'm like, do you not want my money? I'm so I'm uncomfortable here. And I think that's one thing that we do at Frothy really well is I think it's so important to be, you feel welcome no matter who you are or what you're doing in our buildings.
Okay.
Except for I did have somebody just pee on our front mat, walk in our building and pee on the front mat last week. She's no longer welcome in our building.
Wait, she did it in a response to something?
No, she just walked in, and while talking, our dining rooms weren't open, so we were kind of like greeting people at the door. And while talking to one of our employees, she just peed while she was talking to him, which is really impressive to be able to stand, talk, and pee as a female. You don't deal with that. But
was she like having like, was she's like uncontrollable pee, or was it like a like, or was it a statement pee? Like, was like
no, it was uncontrollable. And she was, it was downtown Nashville, and things get crazy down there.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
You never know.
You never know. Okay. Well, that's good wisdom. Don't pee on things.
Yeah. I will not allow you back in.
Okay. That's good. All right. Hey, let's do a little speed round. Let's do a little speed round. Okay. So I call it my speed slow round because it's not really it's like kind of fast, but not really. I mean, so we'll see where it goes.
All right. Make a buzzer and sound when my time's up.
There you go. Okay. First one is, what are a few of your favorite quotes? And since you're a reader, I'm sure you got a few.
Yeah, but actually one of my favorite quotes is from a television show.
Ooh.
Fargo. Season 2.
Nice.
It's start at the start and you work your way to the end.
Say that again.
Start at the start.
Start at the start.
And work your way to the end.
Okay.
And it's so simple, but I tend to be a procrastinator. I'm a kind of a perfectionist when it comes to projects or doing. And you find out when you start something, it's a lot easier to do. And you just do it. And I just love it. It just makes like one foot in front of the other. You start it and you do it and then you're done.
Okay. I like that. That's really good. Any others? Or that's the one you want to stay with? That's good. If it is.
I like Henry Ford.
Ooh.
Said, don't find fault, find a remedy. And I'm a big problem solver. I believe in solutions. And I really like that. I think it's important as a leader. In fact, my husband does not like talking to me about problems because I just try to solve them. Like, he's like complaining about an issue. And I'm like, well, you know, if you did this, he's like, can you just listen?
Just listen.
And I'm like, but there's a really easy solution. I really enjoy solving things. And, I don't enjoy dwelling in the negative or a problem. I don't want problem finders. I want problem solvers. So I really like that quote by Henry Ford.
Yeah, that's good. And honestly, I think that's even, and we haven't talked much about this and that's fine, but I think that's a really good quote in the midst of everything that's happening right now with everything from COVID to the racism in America. I think that we need to be, it's time for us to be solution people.
Right.
Not only be solution people, but then be people of action. Like, this is, you know, we've got this first wave of like, we're posting and we're saying the things that mean things, right? But now, folks, it's time to like it's time to make up some solutions and it's time to put those things into action because that is time to do it. So that's a fantastic quote of encouragement. I love that. I love that. Okay. Albums everyone should listen to.
Well, I mean, your playlists are pretty great.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice.
suck up. And all right. So one of my favorite albums is Alligator by The National.
Ooh, yeah. Okay.
That is 2004.
Yeah.
Great album. My first CD was Fuji's The Score.
That was your first CD?
I had older brothers.
That's an amazing first CD.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good. I love that. Oh.
Yeah. And I was like trying to think. I was like, I'm not a huge, it sounds dumb. I listen to podcasts and books on tape more than I listen to music. I don't know why. I tend to be too in my head with music. I like to be distracted. It's a scary place in my head. But yeah, I think that's a good, those two are great.
Those are
I'll
good.
Stick with those.
Those are good. One or two books people should read.
Oh, you know what? I had to read a book when I was in eighth grade and I just read it this past summer and I loved it. It's called A Boy's Life.
Ooh.
By Robert McCammon. Don't quote. It's A Boy's Life.
A Boy's Life. Okay.
It's a big book about a little boy growing up in the South, actually amidst a lot of racism and stuff. And it's from a little kid's point of view. And it's a really I was really glad I was made to read it in eighth grade, and I was very pleased to read it again this past year.
Oh, that's really good. Okay.
Yeah. What,
another one? You got another one? This is okay. Do you have another one?
I've got lots of books. I'll leave it there.
Okay.
I was gonna spit some Russian literature, but I was like, that sounds pretentious.
No, now you have to give us one Russian literature book.
I love Brothers Karamazov.
Okay.
I think it has a lot to do with faith and doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoy Dostoevsky. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, so you said it has a lot to do with faith and doubt. Did it like help you make sense of those two spaces?
No way. You can't make sense of those two things.
I mean, I didn't know that. I'm just saying, as we talk about this book, did that help in the...
It does spell out things, and it helps you see things from all different sides. It's about several different brothers that are very different and eclectic. And I don't think it personally awakened me or anything like that, sure. But I do think it is an enlightening read.
Okay. Very good. And then if you have to leave Nashville tomorrow forever, what are going to be some of the spots, places, things that you do? What's going to be on that last hurrah in Nashville? Where are you going?
All right. you know I have a love for McDougal's.
Absolutely.
McDougal's Chicken Fingers. That was actually my first restaurant job in Nashville. That place?
Yeah.
Baja Burrito?
Yeah.
All right, so I'm snack sizing at all these.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
I'm going to go to Folk and get the clam pizza.
Ooh, Folk. Shout out.
And anything from Peninsula.
I still haven't been to Peninsula.
It's right around the corner from us.
I know. I'm going to go. Are they so great? Have they been doing takeout to go things?
No, they're doing broth, and Craig, the owner, makes a stellar tonic. He makes himself, and they're selling that, and I think some bread maybe.
Okay.
But they're so small.
Yeah, they are very small.
You can't really open until we move to a right.
Right. Right. That makes sense.
And I'm still going to stick with I'm a big like I love drinks.
Ooh.
And so I love slushies with alcohol in them.
Oh, yeah.
And so I...
Who does a slushie with alcohol?
Oh, you... Lakeside Lounge. You can see it from your window.
Lakeside Lounge.
I know you.
Lakeside Lounge.
$12 Miller High Life. Well, I never. They got a scotch slushie.
Okay. All right, I'll give it a try.
I'll buy it for you.
I'm fine. You know how I'm in my feels about that place.
I know you do.
I look out my window at it every day.
Just shake your
fist at it while I wear my Edgefield shirt. So Lakeside Lounge is like a restaurant bar here in town in East Nashville that took over the spot of Edgefield, which was a beloved restaurant dive bar in Nashville. People, I'm sad for those of you who are listening who never went to Edgefield. It was such a delight.
It was great. And I'm not saying it wasn't, and I'm not, but you can't dwell on the past, Pat. Like we got to move forward.
You're fine.
We got to embrace the change.
True, true. That's fine. Whatever. Okay. any other spots?
I just really like to eat. Okay. It's a problem.
That's fine. That's good. All right. So Lass, what do you think some of the keys to a good life are?
Oh, man. One of the most important things to me personally is, I don't know how to put this in a key form, providing experiences of joy for other people.
Yeah.
And I think if we all kind of thought about how can I make the person next to me or the person in front of me in line or whatever, how can I bring them some happiness or joy? I think we'd all be better off.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm actually in the industry that I'm in, is because it's really easy to bring joy to people when you get to bring them food and beverages. But I really like experiences. And the other, I used to have this on my mirror, and it just said, like, today is the only day. Yeah. Like, you only get today once. And so I was raised in a very negative home. negative outlook. And I have worked really hard to be positive, and I think that I'm a better, happier person for it. And I really thrive in thinking today is the only day, and or knowing that I'm never going to get today back.
Right.
And I can't change what I did in it. So make the best of it and be really positive and try to bring some joy to someone, whether it's smiling or waving at someone or what it is. So,
yeah. And I think that's such a good key of life. And what I know and what I've known of you for many years now is that that's true to who you are. And it's amazing that you're now married to a guy that also is, that's the energy you both exude, which is awesome.
He's just the nicest, positive guy.
Truly is. My wish is for all of you listening. He's not here. He's going to listen to this. But we hope that one day you all get to experience a wave from Neil, and that you just get to spend at least a conversation, because you will be better off for it. Truly.
Yeah. Thanks, Bumble.
Oh, Bumble. That's yes. Right. I keep forgetting it. That was a Bumble connection. Shout out to Bumble. I guess. I'm sure they've had. I'm sure they've had a scandal. So, you know, whatever, you know, but they helped these people get together, which is good. Very good. Brittany, this was fun. This was great.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. And oh, wait, before we get out of here, we totally should have did this at the top, but I didn't know if you had any good story of you and I, of like something that we were both at or something. I just couldn't. I'm always trying to remember like my connections and experiences with people, and I'm sometimes bad at it and sometimes good at it. It just depends on the day, I guess. But I don't know if you had like
All right. So when I think Patrick Chappelle, I think, first of all, you, after your hot chicken festival, every July 4th, I feel like you would come over to our, like, we'd be having a July 4th party, and you'd come over and you're still wearing your blue jean shorts.
Yeah.
And that's like a summer Pat. The other one is, that's just, dancing.
I do like to dance. That's true.
So I am so, so thankful, that I had a wedding. I don't regret having a wedding.
Yeah.
I regret you not DJing my wedding. But the reason we didn't ask you or, you know, have you do it is because we wanted you there as a guest. But that is for sure one of the only regret, I guess, I have of our wedding.
Yeah.
Because you can bring a party, but I also just love dancing with you.
It's fun. Dancing's fun. That's it, folks. Dancing's fun. Be present. Live the day. Brittany, you're awesome. Thank you so much for coming on.
All right.
We'll see you soon, everybody. Peace.